Sometimes I don't even know how to explain it all. I just know that the people I serve with who are most enamored with Jesus in a fresh way, I can feel it in their playing and singing. I can hear it in their prayer. When they sing the song, you know, it resonates deeper because it's coming from a deeper place of authenticity. I think don't overthink it can be helpful on Easter. Mm. We all feel this pressure of like, because it's the biggest Sunday, everything has to be the best it's ever been. And at times that drove me to do things that were a little bit outside of what was the wisest thing to do, like give the people the staples, you know, the ones they know by heart. That can just be a really good play on Easter.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Worship Fuel. My name's Matt McCoy. I'm the host of Worship Fuel, and I'm the founder of loopcommunity.com. And I'm so excited about this conversation today. I've got Aaron Williams with me. And he's been a previous guest on the Worship Fuel show, but we were like, we've got to bring him back and talk about his latest song and kind of dive into some more topics related to worship leading and songwriting. So I'm really excited about this conversation. Aaron Williams, worship leader, songwriter, artist. Let's go ahead and bring him in now. What's up, Aaron? Good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, Matt. Thanks for having
me on. Yeah, thanks for joining Worship Fuel. So it's been, I think, over a year since you've been on here last. You released your album, and a lot has happened since. You've relocated. You have released some more music. And I just want to hear from, like, you know, you've done a ton of worship leading. You've been doing a lot of new projects in the past couple of years. Like, what has caused you to want to, when you went from worship leader to, like, actually artist? Like, what made you want to do that, and how has that impacted your life?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I have always felt like I've been these two parts of me, if you will. You know, like right when I graduated college, I almost moved to Nashville because I wanted to be a songwriter. Yeah. And the reason I didn't is because I was a part of a great local church in Arkansas. And I just felt like, man, this is where my heart's at. I love to pastor people.
Yeah.
End of the day, all of my songwriting is kind of geared toward the local church. And so I chose to stay in Arkansas, which was a great decision for me. And for the next, you know, more than a decade, served at Fellowship Bible in Little Rock, and all along was writing songs and kind of doing artisty things, if you will. I was traveling and leading worship while I was also like super plugged into my local place. That's what my vocational life looked like. And over time, what happened is I started to have some successes as a songwriter. And I also began to take on more of a load through my job with the church. And eventually I was overseeing worship and production across six campuses. Our church was a multi-site church. And those two things, you know, began to fight for my time. And I found myself, like probably many people who are listening, you know, loving to do creative work and increasingly in managerial kind of work, you know, with multi-site and production and just coaching younger worship leaders. And so it was really a heart torn, you know, in a lot of ways of like, what do I do with this? And eventually decided that the Lord was kind of giving me the green light. I would say even maybe pushing me, prompting me to spend more time in songwriting. And so that was a big decision. That, you know, that was like a year of prayer and discernment with my wife and the elders of our church. And 4 years ago, stepped away from that, began to pursue writing music. And what's interesting is I really don't see myself having changed much, because all along I'm still leading worship. I probably lead more Sundays now than I did when I was full-time at the church, because I, you know, had to be at different campuses and things like that. Yeah. The main shift has been which one of these kind of vocationally is paying the bills, so to speak. And I've just moved to where a lot of my time at the church is part-time now, still lead a ton, but I give most of my time during the week to songwriting and you know, quote unquote artist type related things.
Yeah, that's got to be a blessing. So you've kind of got out of the spreadsheets and now more into your journal, more songwriting. And That's got to be a great way to spend your day. What church are you involved in right now?
Well, I just moved here to Franklin. So when I say just moved, like 6 weeks ago. So we're fresh.
We're kind
of figuring our life out here. I was a part of a church called Highland Park Presbyterian in Dallas. And I kind of, fell into that church's leadership just through a friend of mine who was the coordinator there who had vocal cord surgery. It's like, hey, can you lead for a couple Sundays? I'm not going to be able to talk after the surgery,
Yeah.
And a couple Sundays turned into like 6 months because her surgery was harder than expected. Mm. And that place ended up becoming our home, and it was a wonderful community. I didn't grow up Presbyterian, so like getting to serve for almost 4 years in a stream of the church that was different than what I grew up in was actually really, really great. And I learned a lot. I came away with a different perspective in some ways on how to lead worship in a slightly different context than I grew up in. And so we're trying to figure that out here in Franklin over the next, little bit of time. But there's so many wonderful churches to be a part of.
Yeah, that's awesome. How often do you think you'll be playing like on a Sunday morning at a church?
What I did when I was in Dallas and I've kind of fallen into a little bit here in Franklin, I think it'll be probably two to three times a month. Some of that is, I think the longer you go in ministry, at least I'll just speak from my own experience, you can kind of figure out the parts of the job of the role of the worship leader that you really thrive in and that can do a lot of without it really sucking energy too much from your life. And then there's these other parts that you're like, I'm not as good at that. And I think for me, one of the things I've realized is leading on Sunday is actually one of those pieces that I can do a lot of, and that's not the most exhausting part to me. So I've been able to tell my church like, hey, I can be up 2 to 3 Sundays. I can do that far more than I can do the planning and the planning center for, the scheduling, kind of the managerial aspects of the team. And the great thing is our church has, other people that help with that kind of stuff,
Yeah. And that is a beauty. That's amazing. Cause I feel like when you can get other people to, come alongside, I feel like you're also, it's a way to raise up other people to, give them a spot to belong. It makes me think about, I'm doing auditions at a Christian school for a worship band.
Okay.
And they're like, well, what do we do? And they're asking me, what do we do with the people who like audition that just like are not going to make it? And I'm like, well, sadly, a lot of churches just are like, hey, can't make it. That's it. Sorry. We got better people who can play. But I'm like, there's always a role you could give them. They could be a part of the team. Maybe they're not going to be like on stage playing, but maybe they're like helping you schedule volunteers, or they're helping run sound, or they're helping like as a stagehand, or they're helping with getting the sheet music all out to all the band members, or they're helping with the lyric, the slides. I mean, there's so many things. Are they helping you build the tracks? Like there's got to be something in the worship space. Maybe I'm encouraging them to build like a youth choir. Like for all the people who like want to sing that maybe can't be like the lead vocalist, I'm like, let's take them and build like a youth choir where they can all like sing on stage once a month or something. But there's always a way to get people involved.
Absolutely.
And it
helps
lighten the load too for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? Even like one of the guys that I've been on staff with at the church in Texas, his name's Caleb. We're kind of wired the opposite because he would look at me and go, man, I love organizing the team. I love, pulling the tracks together and getting the charts to the band. And he likes leading from stage, but he was kind of like really happy to be, a quote, and don't take this the wrong way, but a number two, like a supportive role. And so we just found this awesome thing where I was like, honoring toward him of like, man, you can do some of those administrative tasks so much quicker and more efficient than I can. Yeah. And that's a huge blessing to this ministry. And then I might have some gifts that, from the stage, are a blessing to the church that maybe aren't his strengths. And so we just, have tried to find the way God's gifted people complementary and work in that way.
Yeah, that's awesome. How would you, what are some ways worship leaders could better pastor their teams to build community and pour into them? Do you have any practical tips of like, how do you pastor them? Not just like, hey, here's the songs, here's the playlist, you know, make sure you learn your part, but how do you actually like build community and pour into these people as Christ followers?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think there's a lot of ways. The quickest thing that comes to my mind is, you know, you think about a shepherd spends time with the sheep, and it's not that, you know, we're necessarily this like chief shepherd and, you know, the people on our worship team are sheep. But I do think that principle of like, a lot of times, at least in the churches I've served in, rehearsals kind of need to be dedicated to mostly to like rehearsing the music, preparing for Sunday, running through the order of worship, things like that. And I can, you know, I can create a little bit of time in the margins. Maybe you begin your rehearsal with a little bit of connection time. Maybe you end it with connection time. But the most helpful thing has been finding, scheduling even times to hang out and spend time with one another, not on Wednesday night rehearsal or not on Sunday morning rehearsal, because I always felt like, you know, the communal aspect was getting the back seat to making sure that we were sharp musically. So, you know, for like the churches I've been serving in, we schedule that stuff out and we do like a quarterly gathering. With the size of this team, we can do it at someone's house. And, you know, this time of year, it's like, hey, we're going to grill out. We're going to have some food. We're just going to hang and get to know one another.
Yeah.
And then maybe there's a secondary, like, and we're going to worship and pray together, or, and I'm going to share some vision. But you know, what's interesting is a lot of the people on your worship teams don't get to spend that much time together because let's say, you know, if you're the drummer, you probably don't get to hang with the other drummer that often because you're not serving on the same Sunday. And when we started doing that, we would have a lot of our team members who were just like, yeah, you know, I've seen him or her up there singing and leading, but because we haven't been on the team at the same time, we've just never gotten to get to know one another that well. So I've tried to create that third option, you know, and at our church, we do that four times a year. One of those is a little bit more like a full day of training and stuff like that. You know, so I would just encourage, you know, worship leaders to think creatively along those lines.
Yep. Three thoughts popped in my head while you were talking about that, because I think that is so right. The third option idea, I was reminded back when I used to lead worship at Willow Creek, we always went all out on food. What's up with these green rooms that are just like, you know, like little packets of Cheez-Its and like a couple like nuts? Like, we were like, you know what? We're going to like really use this time. We're all together for hours, like literally like Saturday night service, all day Sunday, almost doing services. We're together all the time in this room, you know, waiting in between services or whatever. Let's really use it to build community. So we would cater in lunches, cater in breakfast, like good food.
Yep.
And made it like a hang time to really connect with the band. I think churches should not be cheap about the snacks in the green room and like pour into your people that way.
Yeah. You know, we did the same thing at Fellowship, the church I was serving at in Arkansas. We would use a decent part of our budget for food. Yeah. And we did a midweek rehearsal. So we did Wednesday nights. I think it was, I don't know, 6 to 7:30 or something like that. And at 5:30, we would offer dinner to whoever was serving in tech and band. And, you know, if you've got a fairly large team, that ends up being, you know, could be 12 people by the time you've got a band plus some tech volunteers. So as you can imagine, if you do that 52 times a year for Sundays, that's a pretty big part of your budget. And every year we would come back to it and we would be like, you know, man, should we allocate those dollars to different things? There's so many things that we could do, but we kept doing it because of what you just said, having half an hour. And we encouraged our team, please don't view this as like the optional part, like be there for dinner, sit down, pray, get to know one another. Like this is a moment for us. And so because of that, you know, I know every church may not have that budget. You know, if you're at a smaller church, have that budget, you know, it might be Little Caesar's pizzas instead of super nice.
And maybe it's once a month.
Yes. But you can, again, that think creatively, how can you create that moment? I would think your team is probably just happy that you're thinking creatively and you're caring and you're asking questions and you're trying to get them to connect more than they are concerned about, is it Little Caesar's or, you know, a salmon fillet from somewhere.
Yeah. The other thing I used to do during that time is after parties. So after our Wednesday night rehearsal, there'd be an optional after party. And it'd be like, hey, we're all going over to Pinstripes to bowl. If you want to come join us, you know, food is on us. Or, hey, we're going to go over to this restaurant. We're going to go play mini golf here. Or just something like, just something. Yeah. And it wouldn't even have to be crazy. It would just be like an additional hour. Because I know that too, it's, you know, you're asking a lot of your teams to take the time out of their schedule to do a midweek rehearsal. But maybe it's like Saturday night, after the Saturday night service, there's an optional after party just for the worship production teams to build a relationship. My cat really wants to be a part of this interview. This is Florence.
I was going to say, hi, Florence. I think that's a great idea. You know, I'm going to steal some of those ideas myself because, you know, it's like everyone might not be able to take you up on it every time, but if two or three, half the team are able to, I think the biggest takeaway for me is those times are rare. They rarely feel wasted because if I get to have two or three conversations about someone's life, and that always happened for me, you know, and one of my friends, his name's Michael Bleeker. You guys, he's well known in some worship leading circles. Michael is the best that I've ever been around when it comes to caring about the life of the people on his team. And one of the things that he's just good at is you'll be sitting there having a cup of coffee or maybe you're bowling and he'll just ask you, hey, how's your family doing? If you're married, how's your marriage doing? And he'll get into the deeper things of life. And he has told me before, like, man, you wouldn't believe how many deep conversations about real life stuff I have uncovered during those times where I've been playing music with this person for months at a time. And I never knew because Sunday morning is so about caring for and serving that, like, I never had a time to ask questions. But then when we get in that third space, so to speak, I had a moment to ask, and now I know how to pray for, you know, my drummer in a deeper way. And so I've learned a lot from guys like him and you on how to care. But those are the little things. I think people are way more likely to share stuff like that, maybe at a bowling alley or having a meal, than just circling up on a stage and praying for minutes, you know.
It is like what Paul writes about, where he's like, make the most of every opportunity.
Yep.
And are we making the most of every opportunity? These little third moments where you're connecting with a band member, maybe it's in a green room or you're getting a cup of coffee, you actually can waste those moments. And what I mean by that is you can waste those moments by talking about nothing. You could waste those moments about just like talking about the weather and talking about like very surface level things, but you could make the most of the opportunity by, like what you just said, asking the deeper questions, asking, hey, how are you doing? Like, how's your soul? How's your family? How's your relationship with your kids? How are things going with you and your wife? Like, how's your time management you feeling? Yep. Like, are we stressing you out? Is the church burning you out? You know, like really asking real questions. Let's make the most.
Yeah. I mean, all the things you just said, it's like, those are things that shepherds, pastors care about. And so, you know, I just had to ask myself all the time, like, hey, am I being intentional and proactive? Do I really want to get to know these people?
Yeah.
And, you know, I would say if you're a worship leader listening to this, it's not uncommon for us to be really focused on the music. I mean, we love the music. But for me, I've had to back up from that and go, okay, I can still be super focused on the music and the excellence and the production of what we're doing. And then just as focused on the hearts and souls of the people that I'm doing it with. Yeah. And that's just as important.
I think the reason this type of stuff does not happen enough is because we end up caring more about the music than the people. And for sure. I think if we can change that shift, make a shift, like you were just saying there, where we care more about the people than the music, we could really have those opportunities.
Yeah. Well, and the deeper thing I've noticed, and I bet you've experienced this as well, there is this unseen spiritual reality of how we're actually doing, if we're flourishing in Christ or not, affects somehow how you play guitar, affects how you play drums, it affects how you sing. And so I've had to realize that, like, a lot of that gets ignored because it's unseen. But if I can help my team realize that your spiritual health has a direct correlation into how you lead and play. And sometimes I don't even know how to explain it all. I just know that the people I serve with who are most enamored with Jesus in a fresh way, I can feel it in their playing and singing. I can hear it in their prayer. When they sing the song, you know, it resonates deeper because it's coming from a deeper place of authenticity. And that's true in my own life. So, you know, that's where I try to encourage our team of, like, hey, don't believe the lie for a second that it's only your talent that matters here. And I think this is true of songwriters. You know, the song, wow, our songs come from our souls in some way, you know, and I believe the best songs come from the healthiest leaders. And that doesn't mean that in an unhealthy season, I can't write a good song. It just means that I should always be aspiring toward a healthy soul and a healthy heart toward the Lord.
Wow, man. That's a really solid thought there. That's a whole book right there of the correlation.
I wish I had some sort of scientific evidence. That's the part. It's like you don't really even know how to quantify it, but we've all experienced it.
Yeah.
And so
I mean, you could do a case study.
That would be fascinating. Maybe we should figure out
like
how
a Malcolm Gladwell piece right there. We need the Christian Malcolm Gladwell to do that. That's a really interesting thought and totally makes a lot of sense. And even as you were talking, I was thinking of like different people that I've played with in bands where I'm like, wow, that is true. Like the people who were really struggling or were almost making it more of a performance, or the people who were more of like just where it feels like they're just not authentic in a way.
Yeah.
It does reflect their spiritual life.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting to think about. And so what we need to be making the most important thing, the most important thing, and that's nourishing the souls and the lives of our people.
Yeah.
Everything we do at Loop Community is about making things easier for the worship leader. We don't want a worship leader to spend 10 hours a week staring at a computer screen, building their tracks. I want a worship leader to spend an hour preparing their tracks so that then they can use the remaining 9 hours sitting over a cup of coffee with a worship leader.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, how many hours are we spending staring at a computer screen versus looking into the eyes of our bass player?
Yeah. I mean, and from one worship leader to you guys, thank you for what you're doing, because that is so true. And it's you know, with the pace that technology is developing, it can be hard to keep up. I mean, I think especially if you were a bivocational worship leader, or, you know, someone who had, you know, another job, and maybe you're just a great volunteer, like, you have the time you have is so precious to be able to give it, to be able to give it to people is really where it's at.
Yeah.
I think it's where good stuff is.
Yeah. All right. Well, I find that very challenging. Let's make the most of every opportunity there in those third options. There's ways to do it. And I think just making the effort goes a long way with people.
Yeah,
all right, too. Let's talk about your new music. You released a new song. It's called Resurrection Hope. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Resurrection Hope. You know, this song is, for anyone who listens to it or has heard it, the song is, you know, up-tempo, anthemic, kind of bullseye for Easter, if you will. But it came out of like the opposite moment in life. It actually came out of the church I've been talking about, Highland Park Presbyterian, where I was serving at. it came out of the loss of our senior pastor unexpectedly. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, his name's Brian Dunnigan, an amazing pastor and leader. And our church kind of went into a season of, I mean, I would just call it grief, disillusion. You know, what just happened and where are we going and what does this mean? And to summarize the months after Brian's passing, I just witnessed in a very tangible way a church family standing on the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus in a way that was just so tangible. It was just right. I could see it in people's faces every Sunday as we were singing. We were not just going through the motions. We were clinging to the truths that we believe. And it was like in that moment for me, I realized just how foundational some of those beliefs are to our life as followers of Jesus. And I thought, man, I want to write a song that's essentially talking about that. And that's why the verse of the song, it opens up and says, "This has been our anchor in every generation through trial and storm. This has been our cornerstone." And those lyrics were inspired by the multi-generations I was looking at every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And so this song is kind of, you know, I guess creedal in the sense that it is just proclaiming Christ's life, death, and resurrection and the hope that we have in it. And the verses are just kind of these like anthems that darkness doesn't get the last say. We know how the story ends. And so we're going to proclaim it as we're singing this song. And it's been powerful to lead. The first time I led it actually in a corporate setting was in that church with that church family. And man, what a moment. Just getting to look those people in the face and say, I'm not writing a song to inspire you. Your faith actually inspired me to write a song. And here's what it is. Yeah. You know, wow. I barely made it through the song. I feel like I was tearing up the whole time because I'm just looking at the people that have been a witness to the resurrection. In a tangible way for me.
Wow, that's amazing. And we've got all the tracks, all the charts up at Loop Community and Song Select, so people should go check it out. Also, just in time for Easter, coming up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, if you're looking for, you know, a fresh new opener or, you know, it could be a number one or number two song in the set pretty easy. You know, it's definitely got that like accessibility factor to it. Churches of all size can play it. And it's a fun band song. If you go listen to it, like when you get to the bridge, it's got these massive hits. When we were recording it, I was like, man, I want to be a drummer or a bass player on this song. It's just a lot of fun to lead. I hope go check it out.
Easter is the biggest Sunday of the year for worship leaders and churches. Any tips you'd give a worship leader who's trying to prepare everything?
Yeah, I'm reminding myself, I think don't overthink it can be helpful on Easter. Because I think there's, you know, we all feel this pressure of like, because it's the biggest Sunday, everything has to be the best it's ever been. And at times that drove me to do things that were a little bit outside of what was the wisest thing to do, like maybe new songs, you know, on an Easter Sunday. Everybody's there. They're amped because of the resurrection of Jesus. And then I've just given them all these songs that they can't keep up with because they don't know them, you know?
Yeah.
So I usually think along the lines of a fresh element, a song, a creative element of some sort, and then give the people the staples, you know, the ones they know by heart. That can just be a really good, really good play on Easter in the sense of like, all the people of your church are going to know those songs super well. Visitors who don't know any of the songs, at least they'll be hearing the church sing its, you know, best anthems.
Yeah, that's a great tip. So I know you're brand new to the Franklin area. You kind of got a new life going now.
Yeah.
What does a typical week look like for you? Or what does a typical day look like for you? Are you up early? Are you like the breakfast guy? Are you like making all the pancakes for the kids? Are you doing school drop off? Like, give us like an idea of like, what does a day look like in your life?
Yeah, it's, It's a little bit, each day is a little bit different. I think my weeks look similar. My days look different. In general, I don't know that I'm a morning person. It's just the only time. I have three young boys, so it's my time. So yeah, I'm an Americano by 6 or 6:30 a.m. in our reading room, just getting a moment of prayer and solitude and respite before the day.
Before they wake up.
Before they wake up. Thankfully, my two older boys are finally sleeping in a little bit. I felt like they were, I don't know if anyone else kids feels like the earlier you wake up, they somehow sense that you're awake and they
still beat you somehow. They beat you.
Yeah. You're like, okay, I'm going to get up at 5:30. Then they're up at 5:30. Okay. Yeah. Five. Then they're up at five.
I know. How is that possible? It is, that literally happens with my daughter. So what age did you notice that they start sleeping in a little bit?
My older two sons are 9 and 11. And
okay,
I would say sometime in the last year and a half, they started, I think it's when they started caring a little bit less if I was up and they were just good, you know?
Yeah.
Neither of them like sleep in super late, but now they're sleeping until 6:45 or 7.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm full on dad life right now. You know, the last two evenings I worked, at the church and then in the studio till about 4:30 or 5. I got home, changed clothes, grabbed one of my sons, went to the baseball field for 2 hours. I'm assistant coaching both of their teams. And I love it. I mean, it's one of those things. I feel like we all need one or two things that when you're doing whatever it is, you just detach from life and ministry. Mm-hmm. You know, coaching a team of 9-year-olds, you don't have any choice but to give them all of your time and attention because it's wild and crazy. And yeah, so I love that. I love the time with my boys. I love, you know, sports. And so it's been good. So I feel like most of my life is mixed between juggling family and ministry. I do now get to songwrite. I'm in the studio right now about 3 days a week, which is something I've honestly prayed for and kind of worked towards for years. And so I'm in a new rhythm with that, and I'm writing a lot of songs for myself. I'm writing for other artists now as well. And that's just been, it's been really rewarding. I'm just kind of pinching myself, thanking the Lord that, you know, he gave me these dreams in some ways, I feel like years ago. Yeah. And then I just had to faithfully steward it for a long time.
Where do you write?
It's different almost every day. So I'm in a friend's studio right now. I'm signed with Integrities, my publisher. So they have a couple of writing rooms. Cool. So usually if they're setting the rights up, we'll write at Integrities building. And then if I'm writing with a producer, most producers, I feel like prefer to work out of their own space because they've got their gear, their setup. Yeah. So yeah, I'm with a guy named Kyle Lee and Brian Fowler, friends of mine today.
Cool.
We're at Kyle's place, which is just down the road. So
do you write at home? Are you able to write at home with kids at home?
I do. It's harder because of that. I have a writing room. I don't really have a full on studio. I've got like a study with a lot of books in it, some good lighting and just a upright piano. And I feel like I do most of my, I don't know what you'd call it, cultivating in that room. I don't finish most of my songs, but that's where I start most of them. And so, you know, I try to get in there for a little bit every day, or if I miss a few days, you know, maybe probably in there a few hours a week. And it's almost just like a prayer room too. Like I'm not too concerned with what's coming out. I'm just trying to like mine out my heart, you know, find what ideas and prayers do I want to say.
Yeah.
And I brought one of those to this right today, you know, just a little nugget. And the song today is not going to end up anything like the idea I brought.
Yeah.
But having that idea to start the song with, you know, for songwriters is so helpful.
Yeah. I think it'd be very nice to have a writing room to go to, like that you actually like drive to, like when you're going to the Integrity offices and you're writing there. I feel like that would be really nice because it's almost like you're going to work. Like this is like a setup meeting You have to be there. There's no excuses really to like bail. I have a hard time writing at home with young kids because all my kids are under five and it's just, they're always here and they're loud and it's kind of hard to get into the writing mindset.
Yeah, for sure. And my youngest son, I mean, as soon as I start playing the piano, if he's anywhere in the house, he hears it. He just started walking and he is like beelining because he loves to sit and bang on the piano.
Yep.
And obviously that's like really cute, except when you're actually trying to do work and then it's like the most distracting. So yeah, we usually time up that with my wife being out, the two older ones are at school. Or I'll play really softly early in the morning, you know, just when no one's awake. Yeah. It's thankfully that room does have doors on it.
Yeah. All of my writing voice memos have a screaming child in the background.
Exactly. I feel like that's where I'm at. And most of my friends, brutal. I mean, we're all kind of in that stage of life with young kids and, you know, sometimes you get the best ideas when you're just in the midst of life.
Right. Well, Aaron, I appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation. A lot of good nuggets here. And I want to encourage everybody to go check out your latest song. We've got it all on Loop Community, all on CCLI. So go check it out. Aaron, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Matt. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, good to see you.
You too.
All right, guys, make sure you go check out Resurrection Hope. Go to Loop Community, find the tracks, the charts, go to Song Select, get the charts, and play this. Maybe consider playing the song at your church for Easter. It'd be a great, as Aaron was saying, it'd be a great number one or number two song in a set. So go check it out. Anyways, thanks for joining us for this Worship Fuel interview. Hit the subscribe button, comment below what you learned, and we'll see you next time.